This is Politico Energy. Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron.
As soon as the U.S. sanctions went into effect in December, everybody was asking, what's going to happen? How are they going to finish this pipeline? And all of a sudden, you know, and in the Sea of Japan, this light comes on, this boat, the Cherusky. And the people are watching it move slowly. And first it says, you know, we're heading towards Singapore, or we're heading towards Sri Lanka, or we're heading toward Mozambique. And every just few weeks and months, you'd be watching this mysterious ship, wondering where it was going. You know, is it going to make it to the Balkan? Is it not? A part of me wonders whether it was even just part of the PR game, too, because I think so many people were tracking this ship, myself included, until it finally in May just slid into the Baltic Sea. And even officially now, it's not part of the project. It's not officially the boat that's going to rebuild Nord Stream 2. We all think it is. All signs point to it.
Today, Russia's gigantic natural gas company and the upcoming battle for global dominance in the natural gas market. It's Tuesday, June 16th, and I'm Kelsey Tamburino.
So what we're talking about is the Russian state-owned gas company that has a monopoly on exports.
America Hernandez covers energy for Politico Europe.
So basically, every time Russian gas is sold in Europe or in the world, it's Gazprom that's going to be handling the sale and making that money.
The EU's number two energy official has said Gazprom in Brussels should reach a deal over the Russian energy giant's dominance in the European market.
Basically, since the Soviet Union, Gazprom has been the state-owned gas export company. So it's been more than 50 years that Europe has been buying gas from Russia via Gazprom.
America, over the past decade, the relationship between Russia and most of the Western world has deteriorated. Has this made European leaders stop and think about divesting from Russian gas and Gazprom?
So what's interesting about this narrative, which is we should be relying less on Russia for our gas, is that we've never relied less on Russia. It's 40% of Europe's gas demand every year, but it used to be 80. I wouldn't necessarily say that every year European officials get together and say, how do we buy less Russian gas? I don't think that's the issue at all. I think that it's very much a market. There are historical long-standing relationships with Russia as a steady and a reliable supplier. And I think that the big danger that came on the scene was this Nord Stream 2 pipeline.
As if stretching a pipeline across the Baltic Sea weren't difficult enough, a new EU ruling makes it even harder.
So the first Nord Stream pipeline, which runs from Russia to Germany under the Baltic Sea, was not at all controversial in the same way. But now when we talk about going from, you know, 55 billion cubic meters of gas a year to 110, all of a sudden people are saying, wow, are we going to take our dependence back up? Wow, are we going to be shifting volumes of gas, right? So not necessarily sending more, but cutting Ukraine out of the equation. And how do we feel about that? And that's really, I think, where a lot of the political tension is coming from.
So this new gas pipeline, Nord Stream 2, has brought more conflict into a situation that's already tense between Russia and the West. How likely is it that the pipeline will be finished?
There are many things that can stop Nord Stream 2 from happening right now, and that's why it has basically opened up battles on so many different fronts. I think it's got three different lawsuits and arbitrations.
The Nord Stream 2 pipeline belongs to Russian energy monolith Gazprom, as does the gas it will transport. But a new EU law bans the pipeline's owner from also supplying the gas.
Try and first challenge the European laws and rules that have come up against it.
Nord Stream 2, if completed, would help Russia. It would generate billions of dollars that could be used to fuel Russian aggression.
Right now, the sanctions, if they pass, the new bill that was introduced, I think, by Senator Cruz.
If we fail to get it done, we will have vastly strengthened Putin's hands at the expense of the rest of the free world.
If that passes, it could be a big problem, because when you build a project like Nord Stream 2, You know, you need insurance. You need boats that are going to be willing to lay that pipe out there. There are not a lot of specialized companies that can do this. And so the threat of not being able to do business with the U.S. is a threat and a risk that a lot of companies aren't not going to be willing to take. So it's very real that even though there's only 75 kilometers left physically in the water to be built of pipe, if you don't have the insurance to be able to finish those last 75 kilometers of pipe, if you don't have a company willing to do the safety check and give you a certification of compliance at the end of that, you're not going to be able to get up and running.
And America, a couple of weeks back, you wrote that this was Gazprom's horrible year. Why is that?
What I meant by that was that 2020 was supposed to be the dawn of a new decade for Gazprom. I mean, they were inaugurating Turkstream.
Vladimir Putin is in Istanbul today to celebrate the opening of the Russia-Turkey gas pipeline. It will carry 31.5 billion cubic meters of Russian natural gas.
They had just opened their Power of Siberia pipeline that was going to be shipping to China.
Clean natural gas now flows all the way from eastern Siberia to northeastern China. It's all possible thanks to the China-Russia East Route natural gas pipeline, the northeastern segment of which is now in use.
They had been hoping that Nord Stream 2 would be open at the beginning of the year. So it was really this sort of renewed strength was the story that was supposed to play out. And then, like so many business owners who found themselves opening a new business and finding themselves under lockdown, everybody shut everything down, factories closed, people turned off the taps. The price of oil and gas just plunged. And so what was supposed to be this victorious start of the year has actually turned out very differently. And it gets a little tough because we've got to separate challenges that are related to the coronavirus and the lockdowns, right? Things that are gonna maybe pick up later this year versus the challenges that many people are eager to say are pointing to the inevitable demise of Russia on the global stage. I think that the battle between American LNG and Russian gas has been raging for some time now, and I think that the coronavirus provided this sort of shock to the system, and the question was who was going to best take advantage of that shock. But the X factor, if you will, in this equation is that Europe is very much setting itself a target of not having to rely on gas or any fossil fuels in the near future, but ideally by 2050. So as much as both Gazprom and American LNG suppliers want to sort of see this rosy future where they're going to be dominating Europe, Europe is saying, whoa, 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 no, we want to go for electric cars. We want to go toward hydrogen. We want to go for renewables. So it's a clash of a lot of different interests here. And it's not at all clear which is going to win.
America also reports that a German business group, which includes members that have or want to do business with the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, will be speaking today against what they call American interference in German and European affairs. According to the German Eastern Business Association, the U.S. should focus on reducing America's trade deficit with Russia if it's so concerned with Europe's eastern neighbor. For context, the U.S.'s trade deficit with Russia is more than 10 times bigger than it is with Germany. Some German lawmakers will also be calling for aggressive action against the U.S., which are unlikely to happen, but the discussions throughout the day highlight Germany's balancing act of wanting to finish the natural gas project and keeping a good relationship with the United States. Subscribe to Politico Energy wherever you listen, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want more energy news in your inbox, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. Thanks, and we'll be back again tomorrow.
Support for the Politico Energy Podcast comes from Chevron, partnering with California Bioenergy to transform farm waste into renewable natural gas and providing an alternative source of power for a cleaner way forward. For more information, visit chevron.com.